Welcome to another fabulous episode of All the Vegas, presented by Las Vegas Weekly Magazine and The Space, the home of Monday's Dark at Polaris and Harmon, just off the world-famous Las Vegas Strip. Hey, Mark, you know, I very much enjoy our dinner dates together. It's a lot of fun to eat food with you.
I'm a good eater.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a good eater. Not loud.
Well, I think we both love... I'm a loud eater.
Yeah, you are.
Loud and fast.
You eat a lot, bro.
I think we both just love restaurants, just the restaurant experience. Is there any sweeter feeling in the entire universe than when you find your favorite neighborhood restaurant?
Well, sure.
No, there's not.
No, absolutely not. I love neighborhood restaurants because, you know, you can just go and get home and take a shower, put on scrubs, and go. Unless it's a nice neighborhood restaurant, and then you have to dress up. There are sweeter things in life, but I think the convenience of knowing that there's a kick-ass place to go eat within a stone's throw of your joint is awesome.
Well, you're spoiled. I'm now realizing to ask you that question is ridiculous because you're spoiled. When you moved here 6 or 7 years ago, there actually were more great neighborhood restaurants in Vegas, and they have only proliferated. Before your time in Vegas, there were not as many. Like, I recall Rosemary's is a legendary great neighborhood restaurant on the west side of town where we both live. I don't think you ever went there.
No. Never got to experience Rosemary's.
Now you're surrounded by all kinds of great stuff.
Well, I guess, you know, what I've loved to witness now and being a part of is just meeting these great chefs that have, you know, come out to Vegas to work under some, you know, celebrity chef or somebody who's famous on a TV show and have, you know, just sort of honed their own, become their own chef in a way. And then the great real estate market that Vegas is and the cost of living has allowed more and more chefs to open their own restaurants, because I don't think it's very challenging. Having lived in New York City for 10 years and Los Angeles for 8, I can't imagine what it would take to open a restaurant in either of those cities from a finance standpoint. And, you know, obviously today's guests will fill us in on maybe that kind of skinny, because Vegas seems to be booming right now with some of, I'm just being biased because I live here. I think we have some of the best chefs on the planet right now creating exciting new food culture for us as locals.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, our guest today opened my favorite neighborhood restaurant in my neighborhood about 4 years ago. It's called Other Mama, and it is perfect. just a few months back, he opened
his... on the business card.
Yeah, I think that is. It's on there. Yeah. It's the subtitle on the website, right, Dan?
My mom just put it on my chef coat.
Yeah, there you go, that's man. Right. It's perfect.
just a few months back, he opened his second local restaurant downtown at the refurbished Ferguson's Motel on East Fremont Street, an entirely different Japanese experience called Hatsumi. And he's got another one, a Mexican restaurant called La Monja, coming soon. Dan Cromer, thanks for being here. Welcome to All the Vegas.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here. I appreciate it.
I want a chef coat that someone will sew something on.
It's not perfect. That's what it'll say on yours.
That was the first thing I got rid of when I opened my own restaurant, was a chef coat. I hate wearing those things. I'm like, why? There's the most, can you make something hotter to wear in a kitchen? I mean, why is that an achievement? I mean, I don't see that.
It's just that we have to play by the old French rules kind of thing. Is that why people still wear chef coats?
Well, I looked into going to cooking school when I was younger, and I saw the picture, and they're all wearing those tall hat totes, and I was like, hell no, I'm not wearing that. I was literally one of my main reasons, but I was like, I'm not wearing that stupid thing.
I'm not going to that hat.
With all due respect, it's just not my style.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a long time coming. I want to have you on the show since we started doing this show, and it's cool to finally get you in here.
Appreciate it.
Some people don't know that before you came to Las Vegas, one of your jobs was that you cooked for musicians at music festivals like Coachella, and you were also on tour with a bunch of different pretty big name acts. What the hell was that like?
For about 5 years, I'd start the season off with Coachella and doing that, and then go on the tour with different bands. It would change every year just per contract. Vans Warped Tour, worked for Taylor Swift for a really long time. A lot of metal stuff, you know, Godsmack, kind of just B-level fire and beers and that kind of stuff. People always think of some like popping champagne and caviar kind of stuff. It's not, you know, it's really hard work. And these guys, it's a really hard job to be a musician, you know, perform for hours and hours, you know, the way they do on a daily basis. And they really started to take their bodies seriously. It's not the old like Pantera days where it's just, you know, rock and that. I mean, they've all
cocaine seen, and Jack Daniels. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, and then you see what happened to it, you know, it's like even Kevin Lyman, who started the Vans Warped Tour and all that. And he's kind of like, look at metal now. It's fat and old and, you know, toothless. And people are seeing longevity and taking care of your health, so they're taking the food a lot more serious. It's a tough job. A different city, like 5 in the morning, breakfast out by 7, a delivery in every single city. Using locals, and you just cross your fingers that they're not too tweaked out and things like that. You're your own plumber, your electrician, all those things, and then wrap it up, and hopefully you're back on the bus by 11 at midnight, and you're in the next city, and it's just go, go, go. It's
really how many physical. On crew did you feed? Like how many in total?
It would vary on the tour. Yeah. I'd say anywhere from 200 people to 1,800.
Fuck.
That's nuts. Some food was nice and some food wasn't. You know, something like Vans Warped Tour, they're not having much of a budget. You know, you're eating chicken breast, you know, 3-4 days a week. Mm-hmm. You know, that stuff. And the goal is just to cook it perfectly. And then, you know, working for Taylor Swift, you know, we're getting, you know, we're in Boston. Let's get a shit ton of lobsters. You know, it's just whatever. It was good. It was great. I like contract jobs. I like, you know, I can do anything as long as there's a light at the end of the tunnel. And then I'd go out and work in the Caribbean for Viceroy Resorts, during the winter time.
That's right. You basically were like, you did the Tom Cruise cocktail life only as a chef instead of a bartender there for a while, huh?
That's a good way to articulate it. It sounds better than what was in my head. But I liked it. I didn't have a permanent residence for about 5 years. I liked not having things, you know, I had backpack, you know, suitcase and a couple of boxes at my mom's house. I just had to pay my cell phone bill and insurance, and that was it. And I think it's really healthy to have less, and it's something I really learned from that and I enjoyed. But it got very transient. You're living in a different world. You know, it's not the same time with people. You never have to worry about getting to work because you're dropped off at work, and staying in hotels just started kind of tolling on my head. And mm-hmm. I was dating a girl that lived out here, and I just liked it because I grew up in the Sacramento area, and it reminded me of that, kind of a big small town. And I just needed to put my feet down.
Yeah. Well, you put your feet down, man. You're crushing it out here.
Thanks. Well, when you first got here, are you one of those people who came out and was like, ah, we'll see how this Vegas thing goes, not planning to be here very long, and then it kind of sucked you in somehow? Or did you kind of hit it off with Vegas right off the bat?
I've always been one to move a lot of places. I used to always kind of blame my surroundings for my own personal junk, you know, and just keep moving around. And I just, my big goal here is, you know, I've said I've, you know, been out in the Caribbean different spots, and I've been depressed there. I've been, you know, great, you know, places here, and I felt crappy or this or that, and I realized it's such an internal thing. And what I like about Vegas is this really, it's how you want to perceive it. It is an oasis. You can see something that's, you know, arid and no culture and there's no restaurants, or you can look at it as a place. This place is beautiful and it's ready for those things, and there is opportunity to be part of that change, which I feel really blessed about. And like you're talking about, you know, places like New York and LA, it's tough. You know, the budget I had, you know, there's no way I could have done any of these things and made any mark. And the way that people embrace here, I was just like, man, this is a city that just is ready, and it's full of great people, and it's constantly getting new people, and it's finding its identity. And I feel really blessed to be able to witness that change and be a part of it. Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, from a performer background, right? Like I came out here to be in a show, and I understood quickly how the Strip sort of is that, you know, the nucleus of Las Vegas. And if the Strip is working, then it just expands out to 20 minutes in any direction. And what was cool to witness is how the city, like you just mentioned, embraced all walks. It just didn't matter what you did. As long as you were a cool cat and you were good at what you did, you'd be embraced. And because they knew that you were contributing somehow to make what was happening over there on the Strip kind of fly. And that was kind of a neat thing for me to experience. And, you know, I see that now because I'm not in a show at the moment, and I can go out and have drinks with my wife, and Brock and I go out and have dinners, and just witnessing the culture of this community embrace our food scene now is actually really cool. Like, it's really neat to see.
Yeah, I mean, I've had people, when I first opened up, come up to me and just be like, thank you. Like, for what? Like, for opening up this by my house.
For opening a restaurant, you know? Yeah.
And I was kind of like, I was in shock. I didn't realize the need until after the fact. You know, I didn't have some like master plan, like, oh, this neighborhood, I've done my research. It was like literally the one place I can afford. It was close by my house. I was starving for, I wanted a place where I could get oysters and some good seafood and cocktails personally. And I just built what I wanted to go to, and it worked. And timing wise, I didn't realize how much everybody has been looking to talk about things off the strip. And we really got lucky with that momentum because people already, you know, like, I love the strip. It's amazing. I respect it. But people are, it's looking for the next generation of what Las Vegas is and what is that real human, you know, life here like. And yeah, it's been great to get the support. And the,
There still is that, you know, that stigma, because when I first moved here, people are like, oh, you live at the Venetian? You know, like when I moved here to do the show and open the show, they're like, oh, you living at the Venetian? I'm like, no, bro. I live in the burbs, man. You know, and it's just been such a great thing to witness. You spent a lot of time in Japan, you know. What originally attracted you there, and, you know, what's that like with their culture and their whole system and the way things go down?
Actually, my aunt was just in town, so the restaurant is named after my aunt, Hatsumi. She's from Okinawa. She married my uncle during the Vietnam War. She's been living out in Oklahoma for over 30 years. She's kind of a little Japanese lady with an oaky accent and little blue streaks in her hair, and she's the sweetest lady. You know, it's like if someone asks if you want a ham sandwich, you say yes, she would like roast a ham and then slice it for you.
That's awesome.
So she's kind of originally got me into that. And then when my first job, I was crazy about eating sushi. So I got a job at a sushi bar in Sacramento when I was 18. I did sushi for a couple of years, and then I wound up getting a job in Japan, and I moved there for 2 years. Working, training in kaiseki and sushi in a really rural area. Working like 15 hours a day, 7 days a week, a couple hundred bucks a month, just room and board. Didn't really speak any language at that time. That was a great experience for me, not just, you know, because of Japanese culture, but I think it's great to kind of be a minority at one point in your life and not be able to just express, you know, I was very just kind of bad attitude, stoner, skater, kid, and it just forced me to shut up and process my thoughts, which was a really big growth time for me.
I'm still trying to do that.
Yeah, and our listeners and who don't know Dan, Dan's white, by the way. Anybody listening, Dan is a white guy, for our listeners who don't know Dan.
Then I was leaving. I was working out there illegally because I was on a tourist visa, and then I was leaving. I actually got thrown in the jail in Osaka for overnight for overstaying, and then I got blacklisted from the country for 10 years.
No way.
Yeah. So didn't go back for a minute. And when that cleared,
just 10 years.
When that cleared, I've gone back every year just to kind of train for like a month or just go see some stuff and got a lot of friends there. But what really attracts me with Japanese culture and food realm is something they call omotenashi, which is about understanding what your customer needs before they even need it. You know, is that the right height? Is that, you know, are you playing, you know, ahead of the moment? You know, they shouldn't have to ask for it. You can see that their drink's getting a little low. You can see this is right there. And one thing I always tell with this, there's a really famous kind of like a hot spring in Japan. When you check in, they'll have like a kimono for you, like in your room. But as you walk through in the doorway, there's different notches throughout the doorway. So as you walk through, they can size you up perfectly without even asking you. And by the time you get to your room, you have the perfect fitting kimono sitting there. And you're just like, Jesus, how do they know? So like, things amazing. Like that turn me on. Like, I love food and cooking, but I love the psychology of it. My first teacher, he could make a huge sashimi plate, and he could tell me exactly what piece they would take first based off of the color patterns. Hmm. You know, like value perception. How do you put your bright colors out to the outside instead of focusing in here? How does the plate seem to be bigger than it is, or things like that? And not trickery, but just making people feel like, you know, they got what they paid for. And that's the stuff that really turns me on.
Omotenashi?
Omotenashi.
I think that's a hat, bro. Is it a t-shirt or a hat? We try to come up with a t-shirt every show. I think that's our t-shirt.
I like that. And it kind of parallels with, if not the reality, at least kind of the idea of Las Vegas hospitality, at which people, I think in recent years, this has been questioned a little bit. Like, does Las Vegas still provide the great, the strip specifically, does it still provide the great service that it's really been known for, that has really kind of helped create Vegas as such a great tourist destination? But the idea that we're really taking care of people, anticipating what they want, and giving them stuff that they don't even know that they want yet.
For sure. I think, I mean, it's different now. There's just so many more restaurants than there used to be. So it's very situation by situation, in my opinion. You know, there's new places, even like Carbone and stuff, I think does a great job with that. And mm-hmm. someone that has that kind of old school class. I wish they would turn the airport into like the hospitality, like best, most hospitable airport in the country. You walked out there and it was just this thick laid on service. Welcome to Vegas. You passed through great cocktails and not cheesiness. You know, it's gonna be like girls with, you know, feathers, whatever. Just like, damn, I had a great time at the airport. I wish I get delayed there more often. Yeah. I think that'd be cool. You know, I mean, that's our first and last opportunity with people here, yeah. You know? And instead of trying to sling just, you know, yard-long drinks down there and getting, you know, a couple machines, like, have a show them, you know, what it's really about and that we do work harder than everybody else. You know, we do that here in Vegas.
Interesting idea. I mean, I think our airport's pretty good.
Airport's good.
For the amount of people that go in and out of that thing, what do we get, 42 million people a year here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, not all fly, but most do. I think airports need mini golf courses for delays. How cool would it be to have like a mini putt?
You and your mini golf.
Yeah, well, you know, it's been on my mind lately. But I think if you had mini putt in a golf course or in the airport, I mean, you know what I mean. Yeah, well, mini putt. Yeah, whatever.
Other Mama opened in 2015. You just kind of explained. I wanted to ask, like, was the concept designed for the neighborhood? But that's not the case. Apparently, it's just it was something that you wanted and that you probably knew other people wanted, because it is, you know, kind of the raw bar thing in sushi that's hard to find in Las Vegas beyond the strip.
True. I didn't even really know what the concept was going to be. I interviewed a couple places on the strip and I just realized I didn't want to work on the strip. Nothing against it. I don't know. I like knowing who I'm working with. There's just too many people for me. I like a little smaller environment. I tried out a neighborhood spot and I was just really cranky and I wasn't being a good staff member. And I realized it was just time for me to either do my own thing or figure out what that meant. And I was just always kind of online looking. I signed the lease on a place. I walked in, I quit my job and called my dad out, and him, myself, my buddy, all pretty much built everything ourselves besides what we couldn't legally do. And throughout that 6-7 months, I was just sitting there thinking like of what the concept actually was. And really, the concept is me in a sense. It's hard to explain what it is. It's just a lot of stuff from my career. It's like the whole grilled fish is kind of based off the fish I really like eating in the Caribbean in that style. You know, sashimi from, you know, obviously a Japanese background. I have a huge thing for, you know, coastal Mexican stuff. You know, I love ceviches and tostadas, and I just love fresh fish. And it's kind of like, you know, don't put me in a box culturally. And that's why we named it Other Mamas, because it's, you know, there's no cultural, you know, definition. It's, you know, especially in America, we're so bad. Like, once you say anything about Japan, it's like, oh, you have to have miso soup and edamame, and, you know, like, there's these standards that we think are requirements, but they're not. You know, it's like, you go to a Chinese restaurant, if you don't have fortune cookies, you're screwed, you know. And so I just, you know, wanted
that was in my fortune once, I think. you're screwed.
But yeah, it just kind of sounded right. And I just kind of went with the flow and just try to be part of the neighborhood. And what are people ordering? What are they asking for? Are we adapting to that? Not making it about me, trying to like show off and like, ooh, look at what a great chef I am. It's like, hey, how can I be here for you and be a better part of your neighborhood?
This is so cool to hear, because I've been a fan of your restaurant. My wife is a huge fan of your restaurant. If we could eat there every night, we probably would. But just to hear your side of it, you know, because, and hopefully our listeners are like shaking their head in disbelief right now, because we have a perception of what we think went into creating a restaurant or how it ended up there. And this story to me is unreal. You're just like, oh, it's the only place I could afford, so I opened a restaurant and it's what I wanted to cook. That's just, to me, the true testament of badass food. You know what I mean? Great, kick ass, all the above. You know, and it's right there when you go in. Now that I know that you and your dad and your buddy built everything, it's going to even heighten the experience for me, because I'm like, oh, shit.
Mm-hmm.
You quit your job a week ago and you started building whatever in this strip mall. Like, the baller. That's it. Tip of the cap, bro, because that's badass.
Thanks. My dad and I almost killed each other, but we barely made it through.
Yeah, my wife and I, we almost kill each other.
I was like, Dad, this isn't the time. This isn't the time for daddy issues right now. We need to get this done.
We need to go. We need to go. How, because I'm a seafood guy, and you said ceviche, it's probably my go-to. If it's on a menu, I order it just because I love it. When we talk about seafood in Las Vegas, it comes in every day, right? Like, there's daily shipments of fresh fish.
Yeah, we're super blessed here. I mean, really piggyback off the strip. I mean, they have such purchasing power. I mean, that the trucks are already coming here, and we're really lucky with that. If we were in Salt Lake City or something like that, I'd be getting stuff FedExed in, and I don't even know how you transfer that cost to your customers. Yeah, you get so many random people too. They're like, I'm not going to eat oysters in the desert. I'm like, it's 2019. Come on, there are refrigerated trucks. Like, you're fine. Yeah. This is only took like one more hour to get here from Los Angeles. But now we're super blessed. I mean, it's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't think about that because we're, you know, whatever it is, a 4-hour drive to LA, and
yeah,
that's where everything is.
You know, well, that's so why Other Mama kind of took me by surprise, is because there's two things there that I never thought I was going to have close to home. One is a bar that has awesome cocktails that I can go in there wearing shorts and flip-flops and sit down at the bar and get that instead of having to go to the strip or to a fancy restaurant and have a great cocktail. And oysters, kind of the same thing. I'm used to, that's a craving. I got to go to a casino and go to their little oyster bar, or I'm going to, you know, get a dozen as my appetizer if I'm at a steakhouse or something like that. It was a special occasion food for me. No more. I can go every night to Other Mama. And why are oysters so good? There's a lot of people that don't like raw oysters, and I get that because texturally it can be challenging.
I don't know. Again, it's not for everybody. A bad oyster is really bad. And again, there's so many different types of them, you know, some are much saltier, creamier, size-wise. You got to kind of find the one right one for you.
Find your right oyster.
I'm a Kumamoto guy.
That's great. Right?
That's my oyster. A little smaller, not too briny.
A little sweeter.
Yeah. But they're, you know, they're fucking awesome. Like, I could literally eat, I don't even know how many. That's disgusting to think about how many I could probably eat in a sitting, but.
Dozens.
I'm a Kumamoto guy.
I like oysters. I feel like it's a good validation for the product that we bring in and rotate and stuff. Like, oyster programs are not easy. Yeah. They really need a lot of care, not just from the purchasing, but, you know, it doesn't matter how fresh they are. It's that guy who's opening it can see that there's something in there that, you know, needs to be disposed of and that stuff. And to me, it's just like a little window of like, hey, if you can do this, the rest is good, mm-hmm. you know, scenario.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got to know what you're doing for sure. Is there a special, you know, because like there's always a mignonette or something that, how did you decide what you were going to serve with oysters? Because it's crosses the gamut. Like, you go one place and they serve certain things. I'm not a saucy guy. I just eat them. I don't really put much on it.
Not even lemon juice.
Not even, dude. I go straight
You're
up.
You're purist.
Yeah. Yeah.
We usually have about 5 different toppings on hand at all times. So again, that's where we need to put in the work to make sure you have something that's bold, something that's sour, something that's chunky, something that's spicy. And, you know, so I always think of my parents with like menu stuff, because my dad, if you don't have Bud Light in the menu, he's going to get all cranky and, you know, does not eat much variety. My mom is very adventurous. So I try to make sure if these two people are in the dining room, is there going to be something for each one of these spectrums? And same thing with the sauces and that. So we just like to have as much options on hand for customers. And again, if we can do it, we'll do it.
Well, I got to do the pickled pepper at Other Mama. That's my favorite. That's oyster topping. Yeah.
Huh.
I mix it up, though. I do a little bit of everything on each oyster. Don't pile everything onto one oyster. That would be
That's a burger.
Insane.
That's an oyster burger.
Blasphemy.
Yeah.
Dan, you must have – Other Mama was such a big hit. You must have received different offers to open another one or duplicate it or do different restaurants around town, but you decided to do stuff downtown. Why?
We definitely received a variety of offers. I mean, that's some stuff I actually thought about and some things, you know, not at all. Timing-wise, it's very important to me that the Other Mama was working perfectly and having the right staff in there, and I would never have wanted to open up anything if I thought it was going to take the slightest hit of quality. And I really felt comfortable with that. I was approached by Jen Toller for the Ferguson's Downtown Project. And we talked, and I just really like the whole community aspect of what they're going with. I think them and Tony Shea and everyone, the stuff that they're doing and the investment and everything is really building the character of downtown. I live downtown. I you know, tend to be like Atomic Liquor, any spots, you know, right there. It's my neighborhood where I hang out and the people that I enjoy, and it just organically seemed right, and it's just the right time. And yeah, I was very honored to be included in the project.
And Hatsumi is a much more Japanese concept than Other Mama. Tell us about that a little bit.
So it's a yakitori bar. It must be all stuff on skewers, seasonal meats, vegetables, seafood, and a handful of izakaya-style appetizers, like making dumplings from scratch and some things like that. It's not a huge menu, and it's something that's important to me because I find that the restaurants in Japan are much more singular, and it's usually kind of a guy and his wife and maybe an assistant or something like that, and you do like the eel over rice, and that's what you do. That's what my grandpa did, and that's what you come here for, and we do it perfectly. And then you go to the next guy, he just does the tamago omelets, and you know, that's it. And he does it perfectly. And I find in America, we have so much product available that as chefs, we can be so mediocre at all of them because it's like, oh, I have saffron today. I'm doing truffles today. And we really don't know how to use these products as well. Mm-hmm. And I thought Japan's really interesting, like pre-World War II, about the limited importing and exporting forced them to be so much more creative with the products there that actually has made them really master what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And having started in sushi bars at 1998, and that was when everything started to become like, you know, rock and roll sushi bars and martinis and, you know, like bad funk bands. And it just, I just watched Japanese food get bastardized over these years. And I'm not some hardcore traditionalist, but it's turning into what we did to Chinese food in Mexican. We're starting to order by numbers. And, mm-hmm. you know, we go in there and to say, you know, ask for yum yum sauces like it's a standard and you know, stuff. And it's really been painful to watch. Mm-hmm. I'm not a huge fan of the sushi burritos and that stuff, just because I think it's gone to quantity over quality, and we're eating a lot of really crappy fish and stuff. It's also not great for the environment and stuff. So my goal is to slow that down a little bit and just kind of focus, and this is what we do, and we're going to do the best that we can. We're not going to, you know, be for everybody and everything. And it's also, it's a 45-seat room. You know, fine. You don't like it, don't come, and we're here for you, and, you know, we'll take care of you if you do.
That's not the first time we've heard that kind of mentality coming from a chef, right? Mm-hmm. In a restaurant. Right. Trees was here and same kind of things. Like, this is what we do. You either dig it or you don't. I also think we're talking about it now for a bit, where this new restaurant's popping up. It's an experience. And I think sometimes in this country, because it's not like this in other places, in terms of my experience in my travels, I always compare things to shows, right? Because I'm a performer, I'm an actor, a Broadway guy, whatever. Everything I do now, whether it's with my wife or buddies, it's an experience. And we're taking time out of our life to go and do this. We just happen to be eating because it's something we have to do as human beings. We have to eat. But that's one thing that I think I took for granted when I was younger, is the experience of actually going to some of these incredible restaurants that I've had the privilege of going to. And I took them for granted. Like, I've been able to eat in some incredible places in New York and LA and overseas and wherever we've traveled. And I took for granted the experience of actually just being in that restaurant. And I think that's something that, you know, with Other Mama, you've hit it on the head. I haven't been downtown yet. I'm looking forward to coming. But it's an experience. And it's like what Brock said. I can sit at the bar and flip-flops and have a kick-ass cocktail. But you're in this environment where you're just like, this is what's happening right now. You know, and this is what I'm eating, and it's baller. I think more people need to understand the work that goes into a restaurant and really enjoy that experience, not only with the food, but just being in that environment. I think it's a big part of it that I think we as Americans do not acknowledge enough.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you on the show part. That was something that got me into food as well. Like, sushi bars for me made me understand the difference between eating a dining and an experience. Mm-hmm. I love the showmanship. I love the little tricks. And I love just the whole thing of it. Remember your name, remember what you had last time, and, you know, those things. Yeah. And that's something that's really radiated with me. And I even talk with my guys and stuff, you know, treat it like a sushi bar. And that, hey, guys, don't lean on the counter. Don't cross your arms. Don't turn it back to the customers if you don't need to. Make sure you're saying hello. Say goodbye. You know, these are the things that create a real experience and the energy, and that we can show respect to people that, yes, you are taking the time to come there. You are paying our bills, and we need to respect that, you know, and show that we are at attention, you know, all the time, and we are available.
It's a service industry, you know, like, it, no different. I'm on stage to make people forget about their problems for a couple of hours. It's no different when you come to a restaurant, I don't think. You know, food's so good, the experience is so good, you're going to forget about the bullshit going on. And technology, too, has also enabled what you were just talking about to become a little easier, like remembering what I had last time. You know, you can notate in the computer, hey, Mark was here, and this is what he really likes, this is what he doesn't like. Hey, that guy, he was a freaking jack off, pain in the ass. I've worked in the service as an actor in New York. Trust me, I've bartended and waited tables enough. I hated getting a slip from my host that said pita. right at the top, and it's a pain in the ass. You know, this guy's a regular, but he's a pita. And it was in there, so you know that you, hey man, good to see you again. You go a little bit more on the
pita. Dan's got those notes in his system at Other Mama about me. I know it says, give that guy a shot of whiskey right off the bat so he'll shut up.
It's more of a poster in the back.
Yeah, yeah, with a big circle,
big picture,
and a red line.
If you see this man,
do not allow.
Give him several shots and send him on his merry way.
Four roses?
He's wearing flip-flops. Tell him we do not allow it. It has to be shoes only.
Cover up those hobbit toes immediately. I have been to Hatsumi already, of course, and it's amazing. What I love, and you describe this a little bit already, is that it is a very specific kind of experience, and in the world of Japanese cuisine, that's how it is. Someone does this, someone does that, someone does that, and you go to that restaurant if that's what you're in the mood for. And I think that's important because in the restaurant world today, maybe especially in Las Vegas, there's probably you feel a demand to do something for everybody so that you can broaden your audience. And you know, there's other stuff at Hatsumi. It's not just awesome skewered sticks of goodness coming off of that grill, but that's the focal point. And it's just cool to have a lot of places like that. We're lucky in Vegas that we have a lot of great Japanese restaurants, and a lot of them do specialize in one thing or another thing, ramen or what have you. But there's still room to do more of that kind of stuff.
It's tough. I mean, it's the Other Mama being the first time as an operator and a chef. You know, before I was just a chef, I'd be like, oh, let's change the menu. Let's do this, do that. And now I'm like, oh God, if I take the chicken off, no one's going to come back. You know, my business is going to fail. You know, and it's easy. You know, so you have a sushi bar, you see the guy down the street serving crispy rice, spicy tuna. Oh, I better do that too. I get the, you know, it's just kind of game. And there's a lot of fear of, you know, just missing out on that little business. But, you know, can't live in fear. And it's just growth. And Vegas is getting grown up enough now to, you know, have more smaller, specific restaurants.
We are. You have okonomiyaki there, which I love, and that's a hard dish to get.
Yeah, I love it. It's, I'm saying ours is perfect. I think I've had some very poorly done ones in the United States, which has kind of given it a bad rap. That's another thing. They have restaurants that just do that. And you should watch these guys. You know, it's kind of on the teppan. They're, you know, their elbows are moving. They're flipping this, and you know, just kind of slide the thing right in front of you. It's awesome. I'd love to do something like that in town. But just, you know, slowly, you know, I said I'd like to bring some new stuff, but it's also not meant to be at the pace that I want to bring it at. So We're just kind of educating people and seeing what's working and then try to expand in those directions.
I suppose I should explain, or maybe you should explain what that dish is, because it occurs to me maybe people don't know what the hell we're talking about.
Okonomiyaki is a savory Japanese pancake. It has a shredded cabbage in it, mountain yam. Ours has a shrimp and bacon added into it. Pan fried, topped with kind of like a okonomi sauce, which is similar to like a tonkatsu sauce, a little bit of Japanese mayo, scallions, ginger. It just gets layered up and then cut into quarters. It's just nice, salty, sweet goodness. Yeah, it's just some really good drinking food.
It's one of the many things I just could not stop eating when I was there. I ate too much. I feel like we missed an opportunity. We should have probably got Ken on the mic over here today, because Ken is obsessed with Japanese food, and we could really delve into why Ken loves Japanese food so much. Missed opportunity.
Just stay over there.
He's shrugging his shoulders over there.
Hot in the corner.
That's right.
What is the latest on the second Ferguson's restaurant?
So La Monja is to be a coastal Mexican restaurant that is supposed to be getting the keys on July 1st, but I don't believe anything a contractor tells me anymore. but I did see kitchen equipment this morning, so that is a good sign. Got a great chef. His name is DJ Noel Flores. Just came to us from Chica. He's had his own tortilla company. So we're going to be actually grinding the masa in-house, making tortillas in-house. I got this cool outdoor grill going out there. It's be like grilling all the vegetables for the salsas and everything outdoors right there on Fremont Street, so people can see what's going into the food. A great cocktail program by actually one of our head bartenders, Other Mama, who's going to be transferring down there. I'm really excited for it. It's going to be, again, this is the place that I want to eat at, you know, when I'm downtown. Margarita, you know, under a little tacky Dos Equis umbrella, sitting there watching people on 11th and Fremont and smelling meat grilling 10 feet away from me.
I remember you telling me about taking some Mexican vacation time sometime semi-recently, and I feel like I'm going to be going on vacation with you when that place opens.
For sure. I end up doing a lot of events in the Valle de Guadalupe, which is just in the North Ensenada area. It's a really beautiful up-and-coming wine country. A lot of the restaurants there are only using local products, and we're talking like abalone and, you know, all kinds of stuff, and making their own olive oils and their own sea salt and everything from there. And it really turned me on to the fact that there's so much to offer in Mexican food that, again, you know, we don't have to put cheese on everything. You know, trying
Where's
to just
the
break
queso?
That up.
Where's the queso, sir? Sir, can I get a side of queso?
That's what, you know, and again, you know, a comfortable amount of change. You don't want to come in here and be like, this is where it really is in Mexico. You guys are stupid if you don't get it. It's like, you know, we're talking like, hey, how do we feel about nachos? You know, people like nachos, but it's kind of just so, you know, 1980s, whatever. So things like they have in Oaxaca, these things called tayudas, where it's just like the whole tortilla is kind of crisp and they put the cheese and everything in the middle and they kind of toast it, you know, on two sides. So it's all still, it's like a big disc. So like, well, what if we make one of those and put all the toppings on top of it and then people just kind of smash it up? So it's still kind of a familiarness of nachos, but here's our version of it, you know, with a little bit of change and education. So again, I don't want to come in there and try to, you know, like reinvent the wheel, but put our twist on stuff.
It's like a mega nacho.
Yes.
Mexican pizza.
Mexican pizza.
Yeah, exactly. There it is. You know, listening to you, man, it's just so inspirational. And I just wish, because I hate getting political and like deep, but I just wish it was easier for people to travel and experience different cultures. Because I think a lot of the problems that, you know, we don't want to get into them, but the bullshit that we deal with on a day-to-day in this country, I think a lot of that shit would be alleviated if people were able to witness how other people live and thrive and where priorities lie around the world. It's very different here. And, you know, I'm a goofy artist, wackadoo, you know, it's just who I am and pretty liberal guy. But the more we talk about food on this show, the more I understand how food brings us together more than anything, really, more than music, I think, more than the entertainment business. Everybody breaks bread around a table. And it's so inspiring to hear what's coming. And who would have thought that this is the kind of restaurant that we're going to have in an old motel that's being restored on Fremont Street?
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's the shit. And I want to go there just because I want to see that experience. I walked by it not too long ago when it was still being renovated, and I was like so grateful. I was like, finally, somebody's not tearing this shit down, and they're actually going to restore it and bring back the glory days of this motel. Because they don't make things like that anymore. And those old motels all along the east side of Fremont, I'm like, man, if this is the start of what's coming with badass restaurants and refurbished rooms and then that Airstream park and just this sense of just kick-ass community and baller food, we're going, that whole Fremont district is just going in the right direction. So, you know, tip of the cap again to you and the downtown project for keeping it up, because it is, I mean, that's a chore.
It's great down there. I stayed at a friend's at the F9 building that they just built, those apartments on Fremont, and to leave in the morning and not get in a car, walk to Public Us and get coffee, I was like, oh, I'm in a city. All right. I missed that. All right. You know, I'm feeling it. You know, it's happening. And I'm really excited for just more of that kind of foot traffic, real city fun.
Things have come and gone down there since this, you know, big transition in the last 5 years. But the staples and those that have actually brought an amazing product to life are still there. You know, they're still there. They're thriving. And they're only going to thrive more now that you're rolling in. And I love going down there and seeing like three or four new things every time I'm down there. It's fantastic. But the quality that you're going to bring is second to none, and that's what excites me, because anybody can open something, but when you open something that is of quality and with that top-notch experience that I was talking about, that's what's exciting. And the atmosphere that's created in that little nook, it's gonna be dope.
I appreciate all that, but I mean, there's already some, just a lot of amazing people down there. The crowds has been, you know, super supportive, and some really just high quality great people I've met over the past few weeks, and they deserve something great. So,
please, I'm not dismissing that. I'm just saying the companies and the restaurants and the businesses that have been down there for a minute and have succeeded, that are still there, those are at the same level. The quality's there, the experience is there. You know, and they're the ones who have sort of weathered the storm, so to speak. That initial wave of new development, hey, convincing people it's okay to come back downtown Las Vegas. You don't have to do the Fremont Street experience. You can come down, have a great cocktail, a great dinner, great bars. You know, even Kenny Davidson's little piano bar just moved into a new spot. You know, it's just
what's it called? Don't Tell Mama?
Don't Tell Mama, the Nerd. Like, it's cool. It's cool.
Yeah, there's a lot of respect, too, for people like Kathy Brooks and like the Hydrant Club. Like, people have really been down there and toughed it out through this development, and it's just really cool for them to see, you know, oh, I got somewhere I can eat lunch now. You know, it's right down the street. And,
well, and for her business especially, to have an apartment complex finally open, you know, so people can have a pet and a dog and bring it across the street to one of the best dog-run places I've ever seen.
Oh, it's the greatest concept
Kathy's
ever.
Amazing. She's been to the space a bunch. She supports Monday's Dark. And
just don't piss her off.
Yeah, her business is dope. Yeah.
All right, y'all. It's time to press on because I have only had coffee today and I'm starving to death and we're talking about food and I'm going to die pretty soon.
All right, I didn't bring anything. I'm sorry.
So... yeah, what the? Why we gotta get into that? We're gonna have chefs. We gotta have them bring food.
Just lie to us and tell us that there's a photo shoot, and then just eat it.
That's right. There it is.
Dang it. Anyways, we're gonna do the Vegas you need now.
Let's do it.
I'm starving to death. Dan, what is your pick?
My pick would be, so there is a Desert Bloom Eco Farm, which is about 45 minutes out of town, that is doing all locally raised produce, and we use them for a restaurant. And they also do CSA boxes, which is a variety of just stuff that is good for that week that's actually delivered to your home. And she's really changing the way Vegas is eating and the quality. And I suggest that everyone starts eating local.
Yeah, guess what? It turns out they do grow stuff in Las Vegas or close enough to Las Vegas that it works out. And also, we are enough of a city that we have these kinds of things happening where you can just order and get some really fresh produce delivered to your house.
Yeah, farm eggs, you know, there's honey, there's a lot of beautiful products out there. It just takes a little bit more work.
Desert Bloom Eco Farm. That is that's a tip right there.
Desertbloom.farm is where you can go get more information.
Is that the website?
And Desert sign up. Bloom.
Yeah, it's fully solar powered. It's an aquaponic system. They lose about like 2% water per like watering just from a little bit of evaporation. The efficiency, it is the future of farming, especially farming in the desert.
That's outstanding.
Good pick, Dan.
I'm gonna order vegetables.
You should.
Yeah.
That's actually the only way you're going to eat any vegetables.
So you should. There might even be a waiting list right now because you're starting to get a lot more clients, and so they're developing more plots out there. But it's a great program, and I grew up in Northern California, so I just kind of miss that little real farm-to-table, not the idea of farm-to-table.
Let's blow it up so that it continues to grow. With the massive listenership of all the Vegas, I'm sure that going to DesertBloom.farm is going to make a huge, huge difference in that company's business.
Well, I'm ordering. I'm going to do it.
I already did just now while
Desert
we were talking.
Bloom Eco Farm. My pick is just, you know, a night out. It's Axe Monkeys. It's Throwing an Axe. Brock hates my pick today. He's laughing and shaking his head.
I haven't done it, actually.
Yeah,
you gotta go
do it.
I would be interested.
It's harder than you think. There's a stump of wood
at
the
end.
I don't think it's easy.
I want to go with Jim for some reason. I feel like that would be really fun.
Splurge Monkey versus Axe.
Easy. I didn't think about that. So I think it's on Post. And it's a great time. You know, they got a little bar in there, and you throw axes. And if you wear plaid, I think you get a deal.
You can drink while you're doing
this? Sure can.
I'm definitely not doing this.
Do we have to sign any waivers?
There's definitely
all
a waiver
the waivers.
Involved. Ken was actually, when I told him that was my pick, he was saying earlier, did you see the video of the axe that bounced back and almost decapitated her? And I was like, no, but that's cool.
All right, are we recommending this business or condemning it?
No, it's awesome. Axe Monkeys. Go and throw an axe. Wear plaid. Tell them you're Canadian and you want the maple syrup special.
Dress up like Jason Momoa.
That's right. Don't shave. Don't
really
shower.
Can do everything in Las
throw
Vegas.
An axe. That's my pick. Axe Monkeys.
AxeMonkeys.com.
What do you got, Brock?
I'm gonna go back and do, you know, recommend something that everybody already knows about because I just did it, and that is Ka at MGM Grand, the Cirque du Soleil show. Honestly, the first time I saw Ka, which was a few years ago, I was not into it that much. I don't know why. I just it just didn't hit me the right way. And then I went back very recently, and it's just amazing. The action in that show, the choreography of it, the things that are happening on that stage that floats around.
Technology is unbelievable. Just,
I don't even understand it. And I've gone, you know, you can go in the daytime, they have like a behind the scenes little quick demo where you go into the theater and they explain to you how everything works and the stage moves up and down. And it's like, this is how we do this. This is how we do this. I've gone to that thing. And then now I go back to the show and I still don't understand how it's possible that they do this.
It's their most expensive Cirque show, right? Out of all of the shows, that's their most expensive. Mm-hmm.
It is.
After doing the music tour stuff for a while, you watch like the riggers and the setup and all that goes into it. And then now when I watch those shows, I'm like double impressed because I mean, I don't know how they're doing it, but I'm like, that's a lot of work and a lot of precision.
That's amazing.
It's a different appreciation for sure. Those guys bust their ass. They're actually, in the Cirque du Soleil world, they're more important than the performers, to be quite honest. The performers can't do what they do without them. And, you know, the safety and everything that goes into it. It's unbelievable. It's a spectacle. Great show.
Yeah, and you know, it's summer now. It's time when people are, local people are like, maybe we should go to a show. It's kind of the time when locals take over the strip a little bit, take the kids and go do that kind
of
stuff.
Get out of the heat.
Yeah, some indoor cool entertainment.
Yeah, get out of the heat.
There's probably some local discount stuff happening if you look up Ka Cirque du Soleil right now. I'm sure there's some summer discounts.
Yeah, there's usually a $99 deal, 2 for $99 for locals. Cirque's pretty good with that one. I see it on the billboards all the time.
So order your veggies.
Go throw some axes. And then go see Ka. It's kind of weird. Those kind of all go together. Maybe
you say that every show, but I don't think that actually is true.
Maybe you go axe monkeying first. You keep the axe. You take the axe to chop up your vegetables. You eat the vegetables, and then you go see Ka. Ka, ka, ka. Anyway, good episode today.
Dan Cromer, thanks.
My pleasure. For
being here. You are the man. Congrats on the new place. Hatsumi is at the Ferguson's Motel at East Fremont, on East Fremont, between 10th and 11th. In downtown Las Vegas. You can check out the menu and make your reservation right now at HatsumiLV.com. Other Mama, one of my all-time favorite Vegas restaurants. And I've been eating in Las Vegas longer than you have, so take my word for it.
Yeah.
That's Cheryl's favorite spot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She knows what she's doing, too.
Yeah.
That's Cheryl. Other Mama's at Durango and Twain. OtherMamaLV.com. Here's another reminder to put the shake-off on your calendar. For the evening of July 25th.
You're going down, bro.
At Electric Cocktail Club at the Palazzo. Esteemed Las Vegas personalities Mark Chinook and Brock Radke will engage in a cocktail battle. Judged
it's
by you.
It's a cock-off. That's a t-shirt.
Yeah, I have this. It's definitely not that.
We should ask the Venetian to use hashtag cock-off. What do you think the chances of that getting greenlit?
I'm going to say not good.
I'm saying slim to none.
Either way. We want to see you there, July 25th at Electra. Monday's Dark returns to the space this week on June 17th, and then it will be back July 15th and 29th. Get your tickets at mondaysdark.com. And, Mark, there's a super special thing coming to the space on July 6th.
We're doing a screening of Making Coco. It's an amazing documentary about the life of Grant Fuhr. If you are a hockey fan and you are in my era of age, Grant Fuhr won 5 Stanley Cups as the goaltender for the Edmonton Oilers, and they'd made a documentary about his life. We are going to screen the documentary, and then Grant and I are going to do a one-on-one conversation after the documentary. We're doing a little charity give back with some of the proceeds. Grant and his wife are going to come in for the screening. His agent from Toronto is going to be here. There's going to be a lot of memorabilia. His goalie masks, there's a collection of his masks that are coming, that are signed, available for purchase. But this is a great documentary. It's just been released in North America, and we're very thrilled to be able to bring it to Vegas. And, you know, with the popularity of hockey now, introducing who he is and what he meant to the game is going to be something special for the space. That's on the 6th. Tickets are on sale right now, thespacelv.com.
That's so cool, man, that you are going to be. I'm so excited to just see you guys having the conversation after the movie up there.
Yeah, I had his poster on my wall. Like, I'm not going to lie, I'm 42 years old. And, you know, when I was a kid watching the sport, playing the sport, you know, through my early teens up until I played in the Canadian Hockey League, like, he was the guy. He was a left-handed goaltender. His style was his own. And he was on the greatest team that I think, you know, arguably ever was. One of them, anyway. You know, that team was incredible. Wayne Gretzky, Mark Messier, Jeff Bookaboom, Grant Fuhr. You're like, what? And they won 5 Stanley Cups together. And, it's going to just be amazing to hear his story. And, you know, he's such a great guy. He lives in, I believe they're living part-time in Palm Springs and then up in Canada. So it's just cool that he's coming to the space.
July 6th.
Yeah.
SpaceElfie.com. You've got 1 week left to vote for the 2019 Best of Vegas Readers' Choice Awards. So head over to LasVegasWeekly.com right now and get all your favorite stuff tallied. Some of the categories this year are Best Pizzeria, Best Taco Shop, Best Coffee House, Best Vegas Chef. I don't know who you might want to nominate in that category. That's the weird category. We should probably cross that off. Best Vegas Chef. Who cares? Best Nightclub, Best Cover Band, Best Strip Headliner, Best Movie Theater. Vote for all this stuff right now. This is all about you. This is your chance. This is your chance to tell me what to do, because I got to write about this stuff. Whoever wins Best of Vegas, I have to write little blurbs about the winners.
And they get a certificate.
Yeah. But more importantly, you're basically giving me an assignment.
Give Brock an assignment. He needs more shit to do.
Which I'm sure you want to do, yeah. Yeah, I need more. LasVegasWeekly.com. Go vote now. Best of Vegas. Voting closes June 24th. You can also tell me what to do by emailing allthevegas@lasvegasweekly.com. All I ask in return is a few stars rating on iTunes for All the Vegas. Thank you. Thank you. You can also listen to us on YouTube and at allthevegas.com. Thanks once again to Dan Cromer. Thanks, as always, to Mark and Ken. Thank you for listening. Drive carefully. Come back soon.